You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good,
Dean
Johnson.
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com. And streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Bates Motel After Show.
We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip.
And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Bates Motel After Show.
I always feel like...
Sorry. Bing is for doing, and we are doing the Bates Motel after show. I am Joe Braswell. We're listening to Rockwell and Michael Jackson.
Classic 80s.
This is so your generation.
So mine.
I don't even know what this song is, man.
It's Rockwell. He was...
Okay. I get it. Yeah. Again, I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined with my good friend Nando Blasquez.
Hello there, everybody.
And we are missing two. Well, we're missing two. One is Dua Casey, who is feeling under the weather and could not make it today.
Yes.
So
she's feeling underwater.
Under the water.
Under the weather. Get it?
And then the other is Joe Sanfilippo, who will be on the phone, I believe. Is that true? Is he
Am I on the phone now?
Are you?
Are we all here?
We all here. We're all here. You're on the phone.
House
Katrina
roll call.
All right.
All right. Roll call.
That's enough. So that's just
female viewers.
Nobody wants to play in that.
Our female viewers will be a little disappointed not to see you here, but at least they get to hear your sultry voice on the phone.
My dulcet tones.
Your dulcet tones. Yes.
Right. So let's jump in. Well, I want to get to take care of a little business. I know that we taped this show 2 days after the show airs, which is very unlike AfterBuzz and unlike most podcasts and unlike other shows we do. It was sort of a scheduling thing that we had to do here at AfterBuzz to be able to do the Bates Motel in general. We do 40-plus shows here, so it was a scheduling issue for us that has since been resolved. However, the season's over next week, so we're going to try to see if we can't get something in a little earlier for next week, and then we will have it resolved for next season. But we really appreciate all of you guys for hanging in and waiting these 2 days to get this
waiting
show.
Waiting 2 days to just hear what we have to say about
this. That's very impressive. We really appreciate it.
Because I've had friends of mine call me up, say, I want to talk about this, but your show's not on for 2 days. So luckily they have my number, so we can talk then.
So we appreciate all your patience. And all the folks who hit me up on Twitter and who make the comments on iTunes and YouTube, we hear you.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
So, right, Joe? You appreciate them too, right?
What's on?
There it is. All right. So
he's reading Twitter. He's busy reading all the tweets right now.
Hey,
that's
Joe,
why.
If you're going to be on the phone, you have to pay attention. I mean, go to you right now.
I'm sorry, I got distracted. What are we talking about?
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're doing the Bates Motel after show.
This is episode 9. It's called Underwater.
And it was.
You should tell everybody how sorry we are that we do this 2 days late. See if you can tell everybody that.
Yeah, okay. I'll work that in somewhere. So listen, this is the Bates Motel episode 9. Nando, I can't believe that we're at the end of this show because I'm ready for like 10 more episodes.
It feels so short. It doesn't feel like much has happened, but yet there's been a lot that's happened. I think that's just our comfort level with this group. We're just so comfortable watching them that we want to see so much more.
It's a weird sort of a 10-episode order. It's a weird order, but I guess I don't know if Annie thought, like, well, kind of hedging. Like, it's usually a 13.
Well, I don't know about 13. That's for broadcast. I mean, cable like HBO and such, they have like 8 or 10 episodes, no?
Never? 13. 13 and
nothing. Man, okay, I'm getting used to it.
On broadcast, it's 22.
Well, but the half season's 13.
13 or 22.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You got me then.
And unless it's a BBC show, they'll do like 4.
Like 6.
6 or whatever they'll do. And they'll do one every other year.
Well, 10's interesting.
10 is interesting. But so we're at episode 9 here. We're the penultimate, if you will, episode. And I just really felt like for an episode that's ramping up to a season finale, like, I don't know. I feel like there's so much to that we have yet to discover.
Yeah, well, you know, usually for a show like this, that you're expecting a lot of, you know, every now and then we have a prediction that someone's going to die, but there hasn't really been many deaths.
No.
You know, considering this is the next to last episode,
right.
It didn't really ramp up until that last cliffhanger or two.
Yeah.
You know, where you're kind of thinking, okay, something's going to happen finally. But
right.
But everything else has just been a really good, strong story.
It is. And so let's slightly jump into it. We talked about the storytelling on this level and this origin story stuff and the level of how Carlton Cuse and the guys are unpacking this story this season. And what we're realizing is one of the main characters, what we said early on, one of the main characters is actually the town,
yeah.
The town itself. And so we're really in these last couple of their episodes, as much as we're finding out about Norman and Norma and Dylan, we're actually finding out more about the town itself. And it feels like this last couple of episodes really starts to, the town is more of a factor here. So as we're, you know, we're seeing more of the real estate agents and getting more of the town economy, the
yeah.
Pot stuff and the crime boss a little bit. And so I don't know, it feels like we're just getting into that, yet we're winding down.
Exactly. Well, just like go ahead, Joe.
I was gonna say I think we're also starting to see, you know, Norma and Norman really find their place in this town and not happy with what they stare back at them, what stares back at them in the mirror. Like, Norma wants out. She realizes where she is and who she is in the town, and it's obviously not a good spot.
Right.
And I think that was last episode, and then this episode she's going to try and do something about it, but Alan's not going to let her go, man.
What's cool about that is we unfortunately know that that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, like, Norman's like, we're getting out of here. I'm like, no, you're not. You're not going anywhere.
Well, it's a lot, I hate to say it, it's a lot like the island in Lost. You're trying to escape the island, but it kind of
right.
drags you back in. It's
right.
it's a different tone, but it's a more or less the same premise, excuse me. And also, just like, you know, a relationship between two people, both people can be affected or one can be a protagonist and an antagonist can move the protagonist. The town really is an antagonist.
Sure.
In a way, because look at the way Norma is reacting this week. Remember last week we were talking about how she was just beaten in every interaction she had with every single person, even
right.
these characters that we've never seen before, like the psychologist, for example. They're just totally winning every single argument. And I think you definitely see Norma reacting today. And you see especially her first scene with the pot smokers being
yeah.
just fed up with the town and just letting it all out there in a very different way than she usually does with her yelling, screaming outbursts. But it was really interesting to see her as a woman who was just finally just surrendering and giving up.
Sure. Let's just jump into to the episode then, and then start with a little bit with Norma, because I think that you know, we've gushed and gushed, especially Jose Ann Filippo has gushed about Vera Farmiga and her performance and what she's able to do. This season, this episode, it felt her Norma has really, I can't say this, it feels a little over the top. I'm not saying it in a critical way. Take it easy, Joe. Don't get mad. I'm not saying this in a critical way.
No, I don't disagree with you at all. It felt different this week. It felt different. I agree with you.
It felt like it was almost being played for laughs. It's almost like, in a very, this is my, you know, my opinion here, in the very short time that she's created this Norma character, she's created a character in the first nine episodes, in the first eight episodes, that by episode nine, it's almost like she's doing a parody of the character she's already created. I don't necessarily mean this as a criticism of the performance, because the performance is great, but I just laughed a lot, and I didn't laugh. I was laughing because I know how Norma's going to react. That whole interaction with the pot smokers and the whole...
It was weird. I agree with you.
It was funny, though. Everything about it was funny.
Like, it almost felt like maybe the set was a lot more fun that day because there was a bunch of kids there. You know, and by kids, I mean the pot smokers. A bunch of younger folks that were having a good time, maybe. And maybe she got some laughs earlier. Maybe she broke them up a couple times during takes or something. It felt a little off. It didn't feel quite as tight.
Yeah, even her scene with Dylan afterwards, where she's trying to get some information from him, it was just a very classic, like she's trying to get him to admit something. He's like, "Oh, they just work here. They
right.
just do stuff." You know, it felt like a very just a normal scene between a mother and her son trying to get some information from somebody who's not doesn't want to give in. You know, give in information
as well as her scene with Romero later when she's asking about, well, do police stuff and find them and I got a flag of flowers. It's just all so comic, you know, but it's, you know, she's it's a great character, but I really, you know, that just back to the her breaking up the pot smoking ring. She's just so outraged. This is a woman who has already stabbed someone. She's already covered up one murder, stabbed someone else in the gut.
Yeah.
Had an affair, seen a sex slave, and she's outraged by someone smoking a joint on her front porch. So funny. Completely outraged.
Well, just her way of trying to control something. She can't control the town, so damn it, she's going to control this hotel. You know, there might be a pot business going on in the town that might be the main source of business, but it's not going to happen in her hotel.
And I love those guys, by the way. Go ahead, Joe.
You got to confront what the town is. I mean, that's also happening to her. She's also starting to realize, like, Jesus, where did I move? What is all these shiny happy people? It's all BS. It's all part of the drug trade. I mean, it's got to be sinking in, you know. And I think you feel a little bit defeated. You know?
Yeah,
sex slaves and weed smokers and people burning down.
And even when she beat up the realtor with her bag, it was like a little old lady. It wasn't really a violent thing. It wasn't a violent thing. It was a funny thing.
That was hilarious, by the way.
I gotta say, I love the casting of our realtor. Was his name Matt? Was that his name?
Let's call him Matt.
Let's call him Matt.
Whatever.
I love
Paul Ryan, the realtor. I love the casting. I love that the casting choice was like, hey, we're looking for somebody who's sleazy with a good smile, who's obviously taking advantage of people and completely full of shit.
All right.
Let's make him look like Paul Ryan.
Wow.
I know. That made me so happy.
Always with the politics, Joe Flippo. Always with the politics.
At the risk of getting political, I just thought it was hilarious that the casting went for Paul Ryan lookalike for the sleazy realtor.
Hopefully our international listeners don't really they can get these references. So.
Yes, and Joe, there are some people who happen to love Paul Ryan. So yes. All your sleazy Paul Ryan jokes. But I don't want to alienate any of our.
The choice has been made that I happen to applaud.
Okay. No, and you know, I think Sam Phillips, you do P90X, right?
What's that?
You do P90X, right?
I did it for 6 weeks. I don't do it anymore.
Okay.
You know, I have tremendous respect for someone who finished it.
There you go.
Paul Ryan did.
Well, so listen, I back to Norma. Yeah, that again, back to the comical. That scene where she looks at dude in the eye and he's like, hey, man, I can't sell it. And her only recourse is just beat the shit out of him with her purse. It was amazing. It was a laugh out loud scene. I laughed so hard at Norma this episode. I even laughed at, like, when she introduced the pot guy. He asked, well, what's your name? He's like, Roof or Ralph.
Raouf.
I'm like, Raouf.
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 Now, is that not a hippie, you know, name? I don't know. Raouf.
Raouf. I was thinking like a Castilian type of Raouf.
I love those guys.
Know.
They're out there. Yeah. They got the guitar. You know, it's a little.
You notice when she was cleaning the room, stoners eat Rainbow Crunchies. I noticed a cereal box that Rainbow Crunchies.
Rainbow Crunchies.
There you go.
Little tambourine. Anyway, yeah. I love the stoners. Okay, so let's actually get into the episode. So what we have is a situation where, you know, our guy Jer Burns, Mr. Abernathy, is that his name, Abernathy?
Yeah, Jake Abernathy.
Is on the loose.
Not his name. We learned that.
Yes, it's not his name, actually.
We learned that Jake Abernathy does not exist.
It's an alias.
It's an alias. But so the dead body is we find the body in the... in the bed, which is disposed of, and they have to burn the mattress, which Dylan does not like, and talks a lot of shit about his mom.
You know, how I just feel like it's symbolic in some kind of way. Their sons are carrying out her bed and throwing it out. I feel like there's some major symbolism there.
In a
way that it's like her dirty laundry, or you know, she slept with Shelby, and just her attachment to men in general, and the fact that they have to. Just especially Norman's relationship with her. I mean, notice also at the end of the episode, she's cuddling with Norman in his bed.
Yeah, that's the usual inappropriate behavior we're used to from Norman and Norman.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we've gotten away from that, just the creeped out inappropriate behavior between that mother-son relationship that is borderlining on incestual. We've kind of gotten away from that, so it's back. Clearly,
I guess it didn't seem as incestual to me, except for the whole excuse. Like, no, you could stay in the bed. There's enough room for that. Felt incestual,
it's
but once
weird.
She got in there, I just felt like she was really just holding on to Norman because he's the only only thing, you know, it's almost like trying to hold on to some kind of innocence, or just, you know, kind of like a mother when their son's growing up, like holding on to them, knowing that they're going to grow up and become something.
Right before they make out.
I'll back you on that.
Until the kiss on his neck.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. My mother's never kissed me on the neck.
Okay.
I don't know. Never.
That's disgusting.
Never.
Okay.
So I'll back you on the whole thing up until the kiss on the neck. And I was like, eh, I was just waiting for Norman to pitch a tent and just ruin the whole universe right now. I was like, all right, here it comes.
I get that.
Did you? Never mind.
Let's not get
You're
into
breaking it. Up, Flip. No, I'm kidding. So we have the situation, you know, obviously someone appears to be after Norma. Dylan's got the stoners in the hotel, hold up in the hotel.
Yeah.
We have Emma working in the hotel.
Yeah, and maybe working with Gunther. Gunner over there.
Right. And then we have Bradley asking Dylan to retrieve her father's things.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing we have in this episode is Norman's dream. The Norman's dream. Now, we talked in the previews, they actually made a point to show all of Norman's sort of losing time moments or Norman's blackout moments. And I think that we talked about their last episode or the episode before how, you know, all of our predictions about what's real and what's fake with Norman don't seem to be coming true. I think we forgot to mention him blacking out with the meat tenderizer. The meat tenderizer moment is a moment where that Norman didn't think that happened. That happened. And also there's a moment where he imagined his mother, you know, telling him to go get the belt, and that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So we see this dream here, you know, with him actually killing poor Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't really come in the form of an hallucination, but the way they played it out was this really happening, or was this something that he was thinking about and dreaming about? And, you know, I got to say this, that way that was shot, to look through the water and see, you know, poor little Freddie Highmore choking Bradley like that was pretty goddamn terrifying.
And I thought it was interesting that this scene happened in a bath, especially since Psycho has the classic scene in the shower.
We know he graduates to showers later.
It's like a little foreshadowing almost in a way that that he's imagining this in the bathroom.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and then we also, one of our predictions is, you know, we're kind of concerned about this whole, you know, maybe love triangle of Dylan, Bradley, and Norman, which seems to be playing out in a way that I don't think Norman's going to enjoy. So that's a concern for me. But what do we think about, you know, Norman's analysis of the dream, you know, and that conversation that Dylan and Norman had about the dream analysis? Well, because first of all, he's got Juno, old Juno's right there, just, you know, kicking it like that. That's not weird.
Kicking it.
Juno's under his arm. Juno's right next to the computer. He's tapping away, looking up the dream that he had about killing someone while looking at his stuffed dead dog.
Yeah.
Normal. Totally normal.
Mm-hmm.
So Dylan was like, what are you doing? Like,
his analysis was backwards. He had the dream. He analyzed the dream from the point of someone who was drowning. And he didn't analyze it from the point of view of someone who was actually drowning someone else. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I actually caught that too. I felt that was a analysis of somebody who is drowning, who themselves are drowning because they're overwhelmed.
Right. And it is like, oh, that's normal. That sounds right.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you were drowning someone else.
But he did admit to Dylan that he was drowning somebody else. He did admit that, and he did say it was Bradley. So that was interesting.
That was interesting.
And then also the thing that I think the previews kind of brought to light about these blackouts and everything that was happening was because what he said. He said he wouldn't want to hurt Bradley, and he'd never want to hurt anybody. But we know he has
because
of those blackouts. But he legitimately thinks or feels that he is innocent, that he would never harm a fly.
Yeah. Just like in – that's the last line of Psycho.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I thought that was really kind of creepy and telling when he asked him a direct question, like, you know, you wouldn't want to hurt anybody, would you? And he's like, no, I wouldn't. I would never want to hurt anyone.
I mean, is he telling the truth?
His choice of words, I would never want to hurt anyone.
Mm.
You know, it wasn't like I would never hurt anyone.
Did he say, I would never, or I have never wanted?
I never wanted to hurt anyone. I
never wanted to hurt anybody. And it seems like wanted was hit relatively hard. I think that's what the tell is right there. I've never wanted to hurt anyone.
But he has. Yeah.
But he has. Mm-hmm. He definitely has. And I think Dylan is starting to really see. I mean, like we saw a few episodes ago when Norma came to Dylan and told him, you know, here's what really happened with your dad. But I think Dylan's really starting to view Norman very, very differently.
Well,
I think he's really starting to see him as dangerous and a little scary.
Well, yeah, because Dylan, I mean, Dylan has all the pieces to the puzzle. He almost took a meat tenderizer to the grill.
Mm.
You know that'll wake you up. That Norman doesn't remember. Then he saw his brother walking down the street, seemingly in a trance, to go do something to Shelby in episode 3 or 4, whatever that was.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird. And then on top of all that, you have. Norma then telling Dylan the whole story about his dad, and then he blacks out. So then next thing you know, he's like got a stuffed dead dog in front of him, and he's looking up how he drowned his classmate. Like he's got all the tools. He's got all the information he needs to know about his brother being crazy. There's nothing.
You know, when you line it all up like that, he sounds a little unstable.
I mean, I'm no profiler. I'm no Will Graham if I want to jump shows over to Hannibal, but I'm telling you, I don't know. So we'll see how Dylan is able to, you know. I think Dylan is actually very aware of the sensitivity of the issue with Bradley. And I think that, you know, in terms of how Norman feels about her, how Dylan's starting to feel about her, and what Norman is capable of, and I think he's very sort of afraid of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he is treading cautiously right now with this whole situation. So as he knows, he can't really share any information about Bradley because he knows, you know, she broke his heart. She broke Norman's heart, and you never know what's going to happen with him. He is showing dreams. He's telling him about dreams where he's choking the girl, you know, underwater. So obviously, he's not really in. I mean, he's still his brother. I don't think he's scared of him.
Right.
But he's definitely cautious of him. And after what Norma has told Dylan happened with his dad, I think he's aware that he's got to wear kid gloves around Norman when it comes to stuff like this.
Sure.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this. Let's talk about Norma, the threat of Jer Burns out there, the threat of Abernathy out there, and how the sheriff is handling this. I mean, do you think? I know that. Do you think that? First of all, is the sheriff clean? Have we established this?
I don't think we have.
Is Romero like clean? Is he like dirty? I mean,
we thought he wasn't at the beginning, and then when he helped out with the whole Shelby situation, we felt that perhaps he was clean, but he hasn't really been a do gooder. You know, in fact, right. If anything, he's been a little frustrated with Norma as well. He's kind of tired of her stuff. He's there to help her out, but who knows for what reason? Maybe to put control, to put a lid on it.
Yeah,
no. Who knows?
Well, you know,
Flippo, is he clean?
I feel like he's dirty. I feel like he knows what's going on. He asked those kids on the porch. You know, they were all smoking out, and he asked them, you know, hey, where are you guys working at? And he said, Gil's Dry Dock. He knew what that meant.
Yeah.
And the kids knew what that meant. He left them alone. He didn't give them an inch of grief. Huh. I think he knows what goes on. How could you not?
I think that's a huge tell. I think I agree
with
you.
That is a huge tell.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, Nando, last week, that his comment of burning her to the ground, which was interesting.
Yeah.
That's the way that my man went out.
Oh, absolutely.
So I don't know. So to that end, I mean, is he really on the case of protecting Norma? Is he buying time? Like, we now know, I mean, you know, this is jumping to the end of the show, but we now know that Abernathy, he revealed that, look, he was in on the whole, sex slave ring,
yeah,
and this last group of girls cost him $150,000, and he.
So
needs
now
that,
we know that's what it was.
He needs that money back,
absolutely.
And so we clearly know that he was either he said earlier he's the top of the chain. You know, I think he said in episode 8 that he's the top of the chain, and Shelby was next or whatever in this chain's command. So Jer is the big boss running the sex slave ring, and. And so, obviously, that's what the rooms were needed for. He's going to have a block of rooms so we can run some more sex slave stuff. But so my point is if he is the head of the sex slave ring,
mm-hmm.
and if Shelby was running was part of running the sex slave ring, then what does Romero know? How much does Romero know? Does he know about the ring? Does he know about? Does he only know about the goings on in the town? He's kind of keeping his head down.
It's a small town, so
does he know about the whole sex slave operation?
Yeah, it's a small town.
Is he in on it?
I really feel like he's in on it.
He's in on the sex slave stuff.
I don't know if he's in on it 100%. Maybe he got bought off a little bit. Maybe it's just something. There is still a pot industry thriving in this town.
Well, that could be a separate thing. The pot industry thing is separate from the whole sex slave thing.
No, but I'm just saying
it's a creepy freaking town.
If he's willing to forgive and let that pot industry go by, who knows what else he's willing to let go by? Who knows if he's on the take? Who knows what's going on? Right. I think the question is how deep is he?
Let me ask you a question. If Shelby, the deputy, is handling the sex trade operation, I'm going to assume that the sheriff is handling something more lucrative. So that would be my assumption. I would assume that the sheriff has gotten into his position by controlling something bigger than running the girls. I'm going to guess that he let Shelby have that because that's not big enough for him to waste his time with. Does that make sense?
Well, the ultimate twist would be Romero somehow the crime boss. Like, what if Romero's the top of the thing? Maybe Romero's
even
running
above
the show.
Abernathy. That'd be weird, right? Well, I don't think that would happen, but I think that would be weird.
Ironically, Dua Casey, we've got people coming in from all mediums here. Dua Casey, God bless her, who's not feeling well, just texted in, and she's like, "Money? Where is the money? Who has the money?" Which is a great freaking question because if not Shelby, and if not Abernathy, then who? Who has the 150 grand?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the big mystery right now.
Romero?
I mean, Dylan, maybe? Although Dylan, if he had it, I think he would have gotten his own apartment already.
Right.
So, yeah, maybe Romero. I mean, who's been in the room?
So that's
probably worth looking back and seeing who's been in that room
that's
before.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Great.
You know what I think?
What do you think, Jill Sand?
I think Norma has it.
You think she still has it?
I think Norma has it.
You'll be revealed that, like, I took the money because I was trying to get a better start for us. Then why is she so frantically trying to sell the hotel? That doesn't make sense.
Why is she so willing to sell the hotel, not sell the hotel for a loss? Why is she so freaking out about it?
Well, I don't have any idea how much she put into it, but I don't know. The look on her face there in the car when he got specific about the money, I don't know. I just have the feeling like she has it. I don't know. I feel like
she had a gun to her head.
I think she had a gun to her head. And she just said, you know what? I'm going to have to come up with $150,000 within a day and find out where it is. And that's what she's on a caper. She's going to be on a caper.
On a caper.
Yeah.
One episode caper.
One episode. In between episode caper.
So last but not least, can we talk a little bit about...
One thing I want to say about Norma, by the way, and you were talking about the town earlier. I really want to bring this up. There's a really awesome line that she said at the beginning of the show, this episode. Why do crazy people keep gravitating towards me? And what I loved about it was she was sitting down and Norman's looking like right next to her on top of her. Almost like the same situation at last week when Abernathy was standing above her.
Right.
So, which I thought was a really, really interesting, almost like a foreshadowing type of thing, too.
She is crazy centric. She is the crazy, son to the universe. Like, she's the craziest person in the room.
Yeah.
And because she's so crazy, she draws crazy to her. That's my scientific theory.
And also when Norman called her crazy, if anyone else called Norma crazy, she would have freaked out. She would have gotten the bag and hit him with the bag. I don't know at this point. But she would have freaked out. But notice the reaction to her when her own son, who she is protecting after he killed his dad, calls her crazy.
Well, that's also a line for me. That whole, like, why do these crazy people keep gravitating to me? That's another laugh out loud line for me. Because I thought,
she's crazy too.
But it felt like it was played for laughs. Like, the way the way, I don't know how we can harp on this, but the way Vera Farmiga is playing Norma in this episode is, like, again, we know Norma, so she's able to play on who Norma is. And, like, why do people think I'm so crazy? And, like, put out that doobie. She dropped a doobie. That's right. Put that doobie out. Roof. It's all, I don't know. It's just all a little funny. You know, the purse beating and the whole thing is just a little, I don't know. But I want to jump into, before we can wrap up here a little bit, I want to jump into the Dylan and Bradley situation. So, I mean, you knew immediately. Dylan obviously has a soft spot for Bradley. He's risking, pissing off a crime boss to sneak her into her dad's old place. You knew that when she got in there, she was going to find some shit. You know, the whole, like, I want to find the pocket watch. We knew that she would find something that was going to be something. So what did she find? She found a letter from
From somebody named B.
B, which I think is a man, by the way. I don't think it's a... Ooh. That's also, I would have saved that for predictions, but yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I think the whole, like, B is very ambiguous. I think it's like, I think B is like Brad or like Billy.
Okay.
Bob.
All right, cool.
Billy Bob, perhaps.
Yeah, Billy Bob.
Joe, what did you think of that note?
No, I don't think it's a man. I looked at the handwriting. It's a woman's handwriting.
No, is that right? Your forensic handwriting expert?
I'm telling you,
he's an expert. It's a woman.
Do you pause that and do an analysis on it?
I have a doctorate in handwritingography.
Right. Is that right next to the hanging up right next to your bullshit doctorate?
Whoa, that was strong.
Wow. I can do that. I know you for a while.
I'm poo-pooing on your gay love triangle, but I'm saying that I think that's a woman.
If I drop a theory, that's the only theory that matters.
I can hear the pen just going back above his neck.
Yeah, you can't throw a pen at me from wherever you are, Joe, from your secret location.
You better look up; it's coming.
So Dylan, you know, what do we think is going to come of this? You know, what do we? We've only got one episode to sort of, you know, what do we think of this whole situation, Nando?
Nothing good.
Yeah, nothing good. I mean, I think it's going to come to a head. You know, we haven't seen much of it, but we got to see Dylan bond with Bradley, and that's just enough. I mean, nothing really happened, but it's enough to set Norman off. It is enough to set Norman off at this point, because, I mean, come on. This guy's, you know, totally worried about that. But then also this whole B thing, which I know you're talking about as well, is, I don't see any characters with a B, men or female. So I have a feeling that this is just a bonding point for Dylan and Bradley.
Well, did you believe Bradley? Because I felt Bradley had ulterior motives. I didn't really believe her. Like, I just want to go in the office and see if my dad's stuff. I'm looking for the pocket watch. Did you believe her?
I think I did.
I just got a text from Dua Casey who said the same thing. What was Bradley looking for in the office?
Yeah.
Was she really looking for the watch, or was there some other reason she wanted to be in the office?
Well, I felt it was a caper. I felt it was really going to be I thought she was trying to invite him on a caper. And
But wait, was she looking for something specific, or was she just really wanting to just be around her dad's stuff?
Well,
Did you buy it?
I was suspicious, but the fact that she didn't want Dylan to leave when she was in the room kind of made me feel like, no, she really has she's trying to find something of her dad's just to remember him.
That's
by.
A good point.
Yeah.
Joe Flippo?
She's such an interesting character. Like so far, there's three dudes that we know about that she is involved with to some degree, right? We've got the boyfriend, then we had Norman, we got Dylan, and you know that something's going to happen with her and Dylan.
Well, she's sexual napalm or a sexual volcano. What is she?
Sexual napalm? I think that's what it was.
No, that's what John Mayer called Jessica Simpson. She's
that's what Emma called her, right?
And no, Emma called her a sexual dynamo or
sexual
something.
Sexual dynamo.
I don't remember, but she's some kind of...
Wasn't there some of a locomotive of sexual...
Yes, that's it. A locomotive of sexual energy. Yes. How can we forget that line? She is a locomotive of sexual energy, for God's sakes.
It makes me laugh, though, because I watch her... And my instinct is to protect her, and I want and take care of her too. I think she's got that perfect face for that.
That's how they get you, Joe.
What's that?
So that's how they get you.
That's how they get you, son. But what's interesting to me is I was vacillating. I was kind of like Nando was. But when she said no, I want you to stay in the room. I like having you here. That, you know, that obviously dissuades my fears, and it drew Dylan in. And what did he say to her at the end? How could anyone not love you? Or your dad loved you, he's still your dad. How could anyone not love you? Or something like that. I don't know what the line was exactly.
Right.
But I don't know about you guys. I don't think anything less of her, even though she's going after three guys in a row. Boom, boom, boom.
Of course
she does.
There's
a need. She's got this need for whatever these guys can give her for that moment. And it seems right to me. Very strange.
Okay. Well, the last thing, I don't disagree with any of that. I just, I don't judge her in any way for, you know, the three guys or whatever else that she can be with 10 guys. I don't judge her any less, but I do think that there's an ulterior motive there. So I don't know what that is, but maybe we'll find out.
Well, there's more there because obviously Gil's not happy with her dad,
right,
and doesn't want to see her. So he's associating whatever it is with her dad with her as well.
We know people in this town aren't always who they appear to be.
Exactly.
Which is, almost a cliche for the spooky towns. But last thing, Norman and a teacher. The teacher.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's just some inappropriate behavior happening there.
I've been calling Norman, and I actually also call Emma, old souls. And I love the fact that Miss Watson used that line. And I think once she said that line, you could see the attraction, because she's not looking at him as a student. She's looking at him as an old soul.
I want to make out with you line.
Yeah.
That's the, like, you know, the whole, like, the teacher, like, you're an old soul, Norman.
Yes.
But that's like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Poor Norman's like, vroom.
This is going to hit the papers any week now when they start getting it on or something.
Well, I just think, Norman, my vroom for people who are listening on iTunes was me saying it's going right over his head. I think Norman is completely oblivious to the fact that she's, it almost feels like all of her looks, her weird, like, looking him up and down, or her weird inappropriate looks are, like, for us, the viewer.
Yeah.
And Norman's like, you know, typing away, or he's like reading a paper and she's checking him out, and she's saying, you're an old soul.
The one thing interesting about Miss Watson that I guess I didn't notice really until this week is well, no, I've noticed that from the first week.
Right.
But, well, just the fact that I remember Dua saying that Norman, I guess, would attack blondes, and we're looking at the whole blonde connection,
right,
that this teacher who has this very proper, prim look, and her hairstyle and everything, has this nice strand of blonde hair that she has willowing across her forehead and onto the side.
Right over her right eye.
Yeah. So, which is really interesting and attractive and very modern, and maybe a nice little clue or a little hint or foreshadowing
on who
this woman is, or maybe if he's attracted to blondes, maybe that's something there that's makes her more mysterious to him.
Well, there's a lot left out there to sort of either wrap up or wrap up to one gigantic. I just feel a gigantic cliffhanger coming. I mean, I don't know.
I got to say one more thing about Miss Watson. I just really wish I knew whatever it was Norman wrote, and I could go back and tell high school self that what did he write?
Whatever it was, Miss Watson loved it.
What did Norman put down on paper?
I wrote down he felt like he was choking inside on some black smoke. That was the line that she quoted from him.
She was really into that.
Which, by the way, another Lost reference. It kind of reminded me of the smoke monster.
Oh, the smoke monster.
Yeah, it kind of felt like a smoke Carlton monster type Cuse. Thing. Yeah.
Give them some Lost Easter eggs.
I almost feel like that was the Lost Easter egg in there. Yeah.
That was she's really digging it. And Joe, your initial show number one and two about Norman being the closet pimp. He's one of those guys, and your whole, like, you know, I'm glad the order's been restored. Norman's really a geek, like, whatever it is. You're wrong. Norman's actually putting
Apparently
it down. So order has not been restored, Joe.
It has not.
And I don't think there's anything wrong for a meek, slightly awkward young man to get some girls every now and then.
You get off that high horse before you fall down. You're wrong up there.
I don't know. We all can't be good looking and sound like you, Joe Sanfilippo.
So, by the way, someone in the chat wanted us to put you in the center screen. Wanted to see if we can get you to Skype and put you in the center screen. I saw that in the chat room. So
that was good. Like Joe's head floating. Just,
I know.
Staring him like, hello, Joe and Nando.
Looking down on us.
Yes.
Yes.
So totally. Let's jump into... let's jump into some predictions here now. We have no news and gossip.
No, I have some tickety-tickities.
Oh, you do? No, we should get into them. Hold on.
But we already got that. We got predictions.
The fans.
All right, really quick. Let's just do the fans really quick. Oh, boy.
I'm sorry.
Estelina's mom, David Poe, The Gaming Bros, Dave 1555, Sportney4, D-Skonomi. Oh, by the way, what's it called? David Poe did say that from last week, the poem on the blackboard in the school scene was by Edgar Allan Poe, called Alone, and it's a very good description of what Norman may be going through, feeling disconnected and unable to process emotions in the same way as others. So, really, really interesting. Thanks for that note. I thought it was a really, really interesting one. And that was from our YouTube, and then from our podcast this past week, we had we have most helpful. No, I want most recent. Most recent. Give me that. There we go. We have Alex RT 101291, Braillehead, and Big K 66.
Big K.
And Karen 3221. And Mike L always updates his, so we say hi to him every week.
Mike
so,
L.
Yeah, thank you. And then as far as, I guess the big thing for predictions for me, I guess, is who lives and who dies, because I feel like there's got to be a death.
Does there have to be a death?
I just feel like there's got, well, at least Abernathy. We got to have some kind of resolution to him, I feel.
Give me a solid prediction.
I think Abernathy's gone. I think he's totally gone. I think Bradley's gone, too.
Really?
I think so. I mean, I feel like maybe Bradley's that scene was short foreshadowing. Yeah, I think she's going to die.
Dua, if you can get text in a prediction, if you can, Dua, if you can get in right now, I'll read it. I know you're watching us, streaming us live. Joe San, Joe Flippo, what's your prediction?
I do want to say that my predictions have been pretty accurate so far. I mean, as far as like Bradley hooking up with Dylan, and then as far as Miss Norma's reaction to the stoners, that was also. You know, I'm just saying, just want to give myself a little pat on the back.
It's okay. Pat yourself in the back.
What's that?
Nothing. Go ahead.
All right, here I go. I don't believe that Bradley's going to die. That makes me sad to even think about.
I like killing off your women. I love predicting to kill off your favorite women. So,
yeah, and you may have been right on the other one, which I'm still bummed about. Over on the following, which would ruin my day if that happened. I do not think. I think that Bradley and Dylan are going to hook up. I think somehow or another Bradley's going to be 18 because otherwise it would be really bad. Oh, I turned 18 in April. You know, whatever. That'll come out. And I do think that Dylan and Bradley are going to hook up. That is my opinion, and I do think that that Norman's reaction to it is going to be extraordinarily volatile. And that is my prediction.
I agree. I was really wary. I was pretty certain that Dylan was going to make it out of season one, but now I think he's a great character, and I want to see him in season two. So, my prediction was that. Norman was going to catch Bradley and Dylan, and something bad was going to happen to Dylan as a result. And Norman, of course, would not remember it and wouldn't think of it. But I don't know. I really don't have a solid prediction other than I think that I think someone's going to die. I don't know who it is.
You're not even going to say. And what about Dua? Don't forget Dua.
Oh, Dua just texted in. She says that she thinks Norman's going to kill Abernathy. Her same prediction as last week. Okay, great.
So she's sticking to that.
All right, cool. Well, thank you very much. Joe Flippo, where can we find you besides on the phone?
You can find me at Joe Flippo on the Twitters, and you can find me we do a couple other shows for AfterBuzz. We do Mad Men.
Yes.
With Joe Braz and myself. And we also do,
Get there.
What are we doing, Joe?
Stuff.
Brain is fried. It's very sad.
It's okay. We do a show called Hannibal.
Yeah.
And we do the show called Base Motel.
Well, that's this one.
Did
you say Mad Men?
That's where you can find me.
Nando Vell, where can we find you, sir?
I'm doing the season finale of Celebrity Apprentice on Sunday, and I'm doing Defiance on Monday for AfterBuzz, and you can also catch me on Twitter at Nando Vell, NANDOVEL, and also doing a show called The Geek Hero at the Joint Studios, L.A., dogstudios.com, on Tuesdays at 10 o'clock. In the morning.
You didn't tell me about that.
Yeah,
that's
a new one. That's a new one.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
I'm Joe Braswell. You can find me on Twitter at Joe K. Braswell. Thank you for all your tweets, and I'm reading and responding to all of them. Thank you very much. And you can find me here, obviously, with Joe Flippo and Nando Vell on Hannibal and Mad Men as well, and also on Grantland.com and Watch Extra, because I produce stuff there with Maria Menounos. That's all we have. That's all I got.
Great, thanks.
We will see you next week. Thank you.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.